Not all of them are happy events, by the way. I'll give you that forewarning. August 3rd is the anniversary of 1981 PATCO strike, where Ronald Reagan fired all the PATCO workers.
And that was the what does that stand for?
Oh, yes. PATCO was the Air Traffic Controllers Union at the
Right.
time,
Thank you.
and he busted that union. On the 8th, we have the anniversary of Nixon resigning in 1974. In 1919, the Chorus Girls in Ziegfeld Follies formed a union, the Chorus Equity Association.
Okay, the dancers can unionize, huh?
Everybody can unionize, as we're finding out today with the Starbucks workers and Amazon workers.
Right.
On the 14th is the anniversary of 1935 of the Social Security Act, which all of us, a few of us on this call, really rely on.
Yes, we do.
And the first edition of the Little Red Songbook, put out by the Internet Industrial Workers of the World, 1909. That was on the 19th. On the 21st, Nat Turner leads a revolt of enslaved people in Southampton County, Virginia, 1831. Another sad note, Sacco and Vanzetti were executed 1927 on the 23rd. The Battle of Blair Mountain begins in West Virginia, 1921, on August 25th. And on 26th, we remember the women's suffrage came to be in the United States, 1920. On the 28th, we had 250,000 people participated in the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom. And they heard Martin Luther King Jr. tell of his I Have a Dream speech. That was in 63.
So basically, the calendar covers many historic events that affect working people, not just union organizers or union members, but working people in general.
You've got it exactly right.
Yeah.
Anything that affects workers, we try to put in here.
Yeah, it's very nice. And you use that as a fundraiser for the organization, right?
We do. We're putting the 2023 calendar together now, and I hope that we'll have it to print within a couple weeks or so.
It also is used as a incentive to become a member of the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association.
Right.
And you have a website where all that information is contained.
Website is PNLHA.org. And right now we're actually having the website updated. It's pretty plain right now if you go there. But in about a month, we'll have a whole new look, whole new website, a lot more information. And we're putting a lot of effort into that.
Okay, and Pam, I understand that you're the secretary of the organization also. So tell me what you're working on now. I believe you're working on a memorial for someone that was a very devoted unionist and Pacific Northwest labor history person. Would you tell us about him and what you're planning on doing?
I am. Ross Reeder was the founder of the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association. Ross has been working actively. I have this all written down. So, I mean, he was born in Oregon and born in Yakima, went to college at McMinnville, not too far from you, Lane. And he's a music teacher and began working as a teacher and got involved in the American Federation of Teachers. And from there, he just moved through the ranks. Became president of the state organization, moved on to be part of the state organization, and he produced the first calendar in 1969. And his goal in this as a teacher was, how come we don't teach labor history in school? So here we are, 55 years later, and we still don't teach labor history in school. But his memorial is being planned at the South Seattle College Apprentice Program in Georgetown on September 10th. And our friend John O'Connor, the singer, will be in town coming in for that. He's a great friend of Ross's. And we are so excited that we're going to get a chance to celebrate all of the great things that Ross has done over the years, both as a labor leader and as a, excuse me, as a historian. So it's open to the public, and if you're interested in it, there'll be information for it on the website Tom gave you. But we're excited to get to memorialize him and share all of the work he has done throughout the years with everyone.
I would imagine that a meeting like that, there are a lot of people in Oregon and Washington and also in Vancouver, because British Columbia, all three of those the organization represented all three of those areas. And he worked with them diligently for how many years altogether?
I believe we started the organization like 53, 54 years ago. So,
yeah, it was 1968.
Ha.
And he was there at the beginning.
I remember 1968. Yes, that was a long time ago, but I do remember it. That's always a good sign. Well, I think you're also planning early for a conference. Isn't that right, Pam? On the planning committee.
Right, along with you. Our April, our fall, our spring, oh my God, our 2023 conference is being planned in Washington this year. And we're looking at many themes, and we're excited to be starting early. We'll have presentations from academics and labor. And like always, there will be so much information. You're going to have trouble choosing where to go and what to see. Our hope is to make it both a hybrid so that if you're still uncomfortable with COVID, you don't have to travel. But we're hoping it'll be in the South End this year, South End of Puget Sound, Olympia, Tacoma. So it's a little less cumbersome from the Oregon folks. We'll get more details and we'll have a better handle on it by the next month. And by December, you should be seeing stuff on accepting your papers and registering and getting hotels and getting all set to come.
Right. And you are listening to KBOO Labor Radio this evening. And we're talking with Tom and Pam Lux, who are longtime activists that are working with the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association diligently, as well as their own special lifetime joys. So I guess maybe what Tom could enlighten us a little more on what makes up the goal of Pacific Northwest Labor History Conferences is to represent two items, especially. Would you go into those, Tom?
Well, we're an organization that is both we have academics, you know, professors and students, as well as labor leaders and rank and file workers. So our conference tries to reflect that, and where everybody can get together and who's interested in labor history and learn something and talk to people they may not know and welcome old friends as well. We also every year we have an endowment at the University of Washington. And right now I'm one of the people going through 14 different papers that were submitted by students dealing with labor history. And we'll pick a couple of the best ones out, and the endowment gives them a monetary prize. So that's something else we're doing right now as well.
One thing I wonder about is if a person was interested in going to school or college for labor interest or labor history programs, is it possible to find programs like that across the United States?
There are actually, right here at the University of Washington, is the Harry Bridges Center for Labor Studies. And that's been going on since the early 90s. It's expanded, it's grown, and they've helped develop a labor archives in the library. So it's a great place to for unions and other people involved with labor to archive their artifacts and their papers. The other schools, Eugene has some labor studies. I think it's I forget which one in Vancouver or British Columbia, but Cornell has a great labor studies program. Michigan does. There are several colleges that do.
You just have to know to check it out on the internet, which has all kinds of information about everything. So that's right. Helpful. Pam, what about the kind of things that you want to focus in on the conference that's coming up in the spring? Have there been ideas presented, or are you still in that process?
Gosh, I probably should ask Tom that. My brain is snapped. But one of the things that's really vital to us is minority and people of color in the labor movement. People of color have worked in labor, whether organized or not, our entire life. From the time they were brought over here as slaves, they have been working. They've been working to support their families with sometimes no help, no union involvement. And so one of the things we're looking at is what is focusing on women and people in color this year. What are their contributions, which are many? I mean, narrowing it down to something we can put into a day and a half conference is going to be huge. And there's always things that you need to learn. I was stunned at how many women of color worked for Boeing during World War II building airplanes. That's not something that you know much about, but they had a Rosie the Riveter baseball team made up of African-American women who were not allowed to join the union at the time, but continued to work. And we were finding more and more Hispanic women working in the fields are organizing while they're still taking care of their families. And I think it's important that as women and as younger women, we acknowledge the fact that, you know, you work a full day on a job, whether you're a union or you're just a migrant worker or a non-union worker, but then you still go home and work another job. So we think this year it's important to look at how women, particularly women of color, fit into the labor movement.
Okay, well, that sounds like a goal that I'll be interested in for sure. And I want to thank you both for joining the program this evening. And I look forward to working with you with the Pacific Northwest Labor History Association. Have we covered everything? Is there any last minute thing you want to add, Tom or Pam?
Just one of the other themes that we're looking at related specifically to the conference is, you know, whenever there's a resurgence of labor power, there's also a backlash from the right wing. You know, you had the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, from 1905 to 1919, growing strong. And then in 1919, the government came down on them with the Palmer Raids. And what followed that was a decade of, labor repression. And the KKK was growing strong, which is anti-labor. So you had that. And then after World War II, after the great resurgence in the 30s and 40s, you had another backlash, the whole McCarthy era that crushed and put labor back on its heels. And now you have kind of a mix of the resurgence, especially of young workers with the Starbucks and Amazons and so on and so forth. And that at the same time, you have the MAGA people who are the Trump people who are very anti-labor, and the anti-unionism of Schultz from Starbucks and people like that. So we're looking at trying to formulate some kind of theme out of out of that resurgence and then the repression that we see historically.
Okay. Yeah, so we, even though there's this uptick on unionizing and young people being involved, we also have to kind of approach it with caution because we could expect some kind of backlash.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess we'll wrap up the show this evening. KBOO features Labor Radio every Monday from 6 to 6:30. And I hope everybody in our listening audience tunes in each week. And thank you both for joining us, Tom and Pam Lux, and we'll talk to you in the future.
Thank you for having us.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong. Now they have taken untold millions. They never toiled to earn. But without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel could turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong. And in our hands is placed the power, greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of armies, magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old. For the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever.